Well, hello and welcome to this month's podcast, where as ever, we're going to bring you up to date with the latest information and data in the world of rheumatology. And in today's podcast, I'm reviewing two papers that show the long-term safety and efficacy of JAK inhibitors, both of which have a study period, by coincidence, of 6.5 years. In our first paper, Roberto Caporelli and colleagues show long-term safety and efficacy data for baricitinib in the context of rheumatoid arthritis. And in our second paper, Christina Charles-Schumann and colleagues present long-term data on the effect of upadacitinib on laboratory parameters in people with rheumatoid arthritis. And just to avoid any conflicts, I'm an author on that second manuscript. Well, as ever, to access detailed summary slides of the papers discussed today, please visit imidforum.com. Yep, you heard correctly, imidforum.com. You know, we've changed name, but we haven't changed the identity and the quality and the value of the content on that website. So please head along there and you'll find everything you need. Okay, first paper, the efficacy of baricitinib in patients with moderate to severe rheumatoid arthritis up to 6.5 years of treatment, results of a long-term study. Essential background for you here. Well, this is a study that evaluated long-term efficacy of baricitinib in people with rheumatoid who had an inadequate response to methotrexate, conventional synthetic DMARDs, or biologic DMARDs. So from that, you deduce that they are pooled from the four major phase three trials, RA Beyond, RA Beam, RA Build, and RA Beacon. The efficacy was assessed using the proportion of patients who achieved LDA or remission at each time point within the 6.5 year period. Patients treated with placebo were switched to baricitinib at week 24 for RA Build and RA Beacon and at week 52 for RA Beam. The rates of rescue, discontinuation, and reasons for the same were also summarized. All right, key findings. Well, the rates of discontinuation were low in all studies, which suggests that baricitinib was efficacious in those to whom it was tolerable and in those who had a response a priori. And it appears generally to be safe for use in up to 6.5 years duration. The most common cause of treatment discontinuation was related to sponsor decisions. Non-responder imputation, so-called NRI analyses, showed that LDA was achieved in 37% of methotrexate inadequate responder, 35% of conventional synthetic DMARD inadequate responder, and 23% of biologic DMARD inadequate responder patients treated with baricitinib 4 milligrams. Note the dose, that matters in our world of JAK inhibition. For the same dose, completer analysis results showed LDA achievement in 83% of methotrexate inadequate responders, 83% of conventional synthetic DMARD inadequate responders, and 73% of biologic DMARD inadequate responders. The difference in the numbers, of course, the fact that these are the people who continued. The other numbers reflect the fact that people do discontinue over time. The remission with baricitinib 4 milligrams was achieved in 20% of methotrexate IR patients for the non-responder imputation, while 40% achieved remission in the completer analysis. You know, these are different analyses. They tell you different things. If someone stays in a drug, that's the likelihood of them actually being in remission state. For the same bari dose, 13% and 32% of conventional synthetic DMARD IR patients and 9% and 30% of biologic DMARD IR patients achieved remission in NRI and completer analysis respectively. So that all kind of makes sense. Conclusions from this? Well, baricitinib was efficacious and well tolerated for up to 6.5 years of treatment. LDA remission results are consistent with the previously reported data. And across all groups, discontinuation rates due to adverse events, death, and lack of efficacy were generally low. Similar proportions of patients achieved remission and LDA across the different treatment groups. Okay, so more helpful information in our routine practice. What about the second paper? Well, this is the impact of upadacitinib on laboratory parameters and related adverse events in patients with RA and integrated data up to 6.5 years. Well, again, a few basics. I think you're all aware upadacitinib has been shown to be efficacious in treating moderate to severe rheumatoid. It has an apparently acceptable safety profile. But we do know that there have been associated changes in laboratory parameters with the use of JAK inhibition. And as with most of the other drugs, these were observed in the upadacitinib clinical trials. So we would like to see what these look like in the long term. This particular study therefore investigated the change in laboratory parameters in patients with RA during the following clinical trials. The data pooled from the 6 phase 3 RCTs in the SELECT program. You know them off by heart: SELECT Early, SELECT Next, SELECT Monotherapy, SELECT Compare, SELECT Beyond, and SELECT Choice. Four treatments across this were compared to one another: upadacitinib 15 milligrams, upadacitinib 30 milligrams, adalimumab 40 milligrams every other week with methotrexate, and methotrexate monotherapy. And the laboratory parameters, well, they're all part of our routine panel: hemoglobin, neutrophils, lymphocytes, ALT, AST, CPK, creatinine, lipids, particularly LDL, HDL cholesterol, including the LDL, HDL cholesterol ratio. Well, the key results here, while RA Beyond lasted for approximately 7 years, the results were reported up to 6.5 years due to low patient numbers after this time point. Grade 3, grade 4 elevations in ALT and AST were more common with methotrexate monotherapy and both upadacitinib doses compared with adalimumab and methotrexate. The incidence of grade 3, grade 4 laboratory abnormalities were generally low through any 12-month period with no obvious temporal pattern to the recurrence. One or two things just to highlight. The following events were identified up to 1 year of upadacitinib treatment: grade 3 decreases in hemoglobin and neutrophils within the first 12 weeks were numerically higher in patients receiving upadacitinib 30 milligrams than in other treatment groups. This is something I think we were probably aware of. Incidence of grade 3 decreases in hemoglobin increased between weeks 12 and 24, then decreased through 60 weeks in patients receiving upadacitinib. And the following events were identified up to 2 years of upadacitinib treatment: the incidence of grade 3 decreases in neutrophils reduced over weeks 12 through 24, then stable through 60 weeks. And over the first 24-month period, incidence of grade 3 and 4 hemoglobin decreases stabilized and were lower in upadacitinib 15 milligrams and adalimumab methotrexate compared with UPA 30 milligrams or methotrexate monotherapy. Grade 3 and 4 CPK elevations were slightly higher in both upadacitinib treatment groups compared with adalimumab methotrexate combo or methotrexate mono in each 12-month period. Again, no surprise there. Upadacitinib 30 milligrams daily had a significantly higher incidence of hepatic disorders, neutropenia, lymphopenia, and elevated CPK as opposed to adalimumab and methotrexate combination. And finally, treatment discontinuations due to laboratory-related events were rare, occurring in 1.1% and 2.2% of patients treated with upadacitinib 15 milligrams and 30 milligrams per day, respectively. So again, concluding, I think the upadacitinib 15 milligram dose would appear to have an acceptable safety profile, at least from the perspective of laboratory abnormalities. The incidence of grade 3 and grade 4 laboratory abnormalities was generally low through any given 12-month period. And that said, the rates of dose-dependent lab abnormalities were higher in upadacitinib than adalimumab and were comparable to methotrexate. So comfortably within the realms of clinical management in rheumatology practice. One thing maybe to think about, particularly the impact of reducing disease activity as opposed to drug-induced abnormalities, I think that probably plays through particularly in changes in hemoglobin, where we know lower hemoglobin associated with higher disease activity, but potentially, as far as JAK inhibition is concerned, with inhibition of JAK2, which mediates, amongst other things, the signaling biology of erythropoietin. But I'll just leave that thought with you. The final remarks for this podcast, well, if you want to look at these publications, they're uploaded this month. And of course, to access all the other podcasts and resources, head across to the new imidforum.com. That's imidforum, all one word, .com. And don't forget to subscribe to the Immune-Mediated Inflammatory Disease Forum podcast channel to make sure you don't miss our podcasts in future. We don't want that to be happening after all, do we? And as always, make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a review. And thank you so much for your attention. I hope this is helpful to you in your clinical practice, and I wish you well. Thanks ever so much.